This is the ISO 2021 Preliminary Forecast and Budget Information Session. Thank you so much for joining us. Hazel, we just want to go to the next slide. This is our, in accordance with our mandate, we will be audio recording this session, and then we will be posting the session on our website. The collection of your personal information is in accordance with the Freedom of Information and Protection of Privacy Act. If you have any questions or concerns regarding how your information will be handled, please contact us, and we've got our information on how to contact us on the screen here. And this presentation has been posted on our website as well. We can go to the next slide. Thanks. This is just, we are all in the midst, still in the midst of our COVID-19. The ISO's top priorities are the health and well-being of employees and our stakeholders, and continuing to meet the needs of our electricity needs of all Albertans. We are all aware, we are still continuing all our external stakeholder meetings virtually, and that right now is through the Zoom webinar. Hazel, if we can go to the slide four, slide five actually. So I'll just do a quick welcome and introductions for all of the presenters here today. And if you guys can just give a wave when I say your name. Todd Fior, VP Finance and Chief Financial Officer. Bill Baker, VP Information Technology. Nicole Kinch, Director Finance, Accounting and Treasury. Karen Campbell, Director Settlement Credit and Business Planning. Kevin Dawson, Director Forecasting and Analytics. There's Kevin. Hazel Carvalho, Senior Settlement Analyst. Riley Prescott, Market Analytics Analyst. And Carla Anderson, I'm in Stakeholder Engagement and Communications. Thank you. Thanks. So as you may be aware, the ISO rolled out its Stakeholder Engagement Framework earlier this year in January. And this framework sets out our approach to stakeholder engagement and the important role it plays and how we deliver our mandate. And these are our engagement principles that, again, guide our engagements. Thank you. So this is slide seven for those attendees that have called in. The participation of everyone here is critical to the engagement process. And just to ensure everyone has the opportunity to participate, we ask you to listen, to understand each other's perspectives, seeking to understand, disagree respectfully, balance airtime fairly, and keep an open mind. And I'm just going to walk through, most of you have been on a Zoom session with us, but just in case for anyone who hasn't, just a quick tutorial on how to use Zoom. So when as this is a webinar, all of you as attendees have joined in listen-only mode, which means that your videos are disabled and you've joined the call on mute. If you want to ask a question or type in a question, please remember to type in or say your organization that you work for and your first and last name before you ask a question, if you're doing that verbally or typing that question in. So two ways to ask a question during Q&A, and we're going to stopping at natural breaks throughout the presentation to ask if anyone has questions, but certainly type in your questions at any time during the presentation, or raise your virtual hand. And if we see that we have some questions, we'll stop the presentation and try and get through those. And certainly we'll have time also at the end. And you can, as I've said, you can either click the icon to raise your hand. The host will see that you've raised your hand. We'll ask you to unmute yourself. You will have to unmute. So click that and then you'll be able to talk. So, or using the Q&A, clicking the Q&A button next to raise hand and then typing in your question. So if we can go to slide nine. And then just where to access controls, if you're on a computer, Mac, PC, 2-in-1 tablet, hover your cursor over the bottom of your screen, and that's where the raise hand, and if you've raised it, or your lower, it will then turn to lower hand, or your Q&A button will be there. If you're a smartphone, you'll just always see those buttons, raise, lower hand, or the Q&A button. And then Hazel, if we can just go to that last slide. We do have some people who have called in, so that slide 11, please. And this is just, oh, sorry, slide 10. My apologies. Thanks, Hazel. If you are calling in to the call, it's slightly different, but we can see if you use star 9 on your dial pad, that will allow us to see that you have, that I'll raise your virtual hand. We'll see that. We'll then ask you to unmute and you'll use star 6. That'll be your toggle between mute and unmute for those that are on a conference call and cannot see the video screen. And we will try throughout the presentation to either say the slide title or to say the slide number, maybe not every single one, but just so you can follow along on your deck. So now I'm going to pass this to Karen Campbell on the purpose. Thank you.
Thank you, Carla, and good morning, everyone. So the purpose of this session is to present and discuss the ISO's 2021 preliminary forecast and budget information. So we'll have some details around our AS costs, transmission line loss cost forecast, and our own cost budget. Just on to the next slide. We've got the list of registered session attendees here updated as of today. And I think we've got about 29 participants. So the agenda on slide 13 is, we're at step three there. So we've got the 2021 preliminary forecast on transmission operating costs. So that includes wires costs, some information on forecast pool price, load outlook, AS services costs, transmission line loss costs, the preliminary G&A budget, and the capital budget, and then stakeholder discussion and input and session closeout and next steps. So next slide, please. And then the next one. So you've seen this slide in our last two presentations and in the initial materials. So we're at step five, which is the own cost presentation and the transmission forecast meeting with stakeholders. So we've had two other meetings with the stakeholders on August 11th was the first business initiatives meeting, and then September 21st was the second business initiatives meeting. And then in the meantime, we're developing our own costs and transmission operating forecasts and budgets. And then, as you know, November 18th is the meeting with the stakeholder presentations to the board and then board decision. So the next slide. Thank you. So this is just an overview of the transmission operating costs. So we'll get into the details of this through the presentation. So you can see that the projected costs are slightly lower than the 2020 BRP costs, and then the forecast 2021 costs are again lower than the 2020 BRP costs. So on to the next slide, please. And here's some details around the wires costs. So on slide 19, we've got the projected wires costs are slightly lower than the for 2020 than the 2020 BRP costs. So the 2020 BRP costs were $1.916 billion, and the projected is $1.924 billion. And then the 2021 forecast is $1.9338 billion. So a slight increase there with the 2021 forecast. So on to the next slide. So now I'll pass it over to Riley for the pool price forecast.
Thanks, Karen. So today I'll be running through the forecast pool price, the load outlook, the cost of ancillary services, and the cost of transmission line losses. So to start off, we'll start off with pool price. And with respect to the BRP, the forecast pool price is a key input into our calculations for the forecasted costs of ancillary services, specifically the costs of OR, and as well as our cost of transmission line losses. And similar to previous years, we've used the EDC quarterly forecast update for pool price. Specifically, this is the third quarter 2020 update that was released on August 17th, 2020. And we used the forecast pool price from August to December of 2020, as well as the full year for 2021. We'll hop to the next slide, which will be slide 22. So within EDC's quarterly forecast update for the third quarter, recent market fundamentals are included, such as the effects of the pandemic and low oil prices on demand, carbon pricing regimes, changes to Alberta's coal fleet, natural gas prices, as well as renewables additions. And similar to previous years, we're using a single seed from a sample of 50 seeds. And we use the seed that's the closest to the EDC summary annual price as our representative price curve. And the reason we use a single seed as opposed to an average is just to preserve the variability over the hours for pool price. So we capture those higher highs as well as the lower lows. So move to the next slide. Perfect. So we'll start off with the 2020 comparison. So we see the 2020 projected pool price is about 15% lower than the 2020 BRP forecast. And this is primarily due to demand side factors such as the pandemic as well as low oil prices. But it's also worth noting we had a high import year. We had a high wind year. Imports are up 105% from the period of January to the end of July on an energy basis for this year, and wind's up 66% on an energy basis for that same period. As we move to 2021, we see a 9% increase in pool price, and this is primarily demand driven. When we compare to the forward market prices, we'll start with the 2020 remainder of year. So this is over the months, of August to December 2020. We'll just go back to the previous slide. Perfect. So this is over the months of August to December 2020. So we see that the EDC remainder of year is similar to the forward market price. As we look to 2021, we see that the EDC forecast is reasonably close to the forward market price on an average basis. So we'll hop to the next slide, which will be slide 24. And so on this slide, we're showing pool price duration curves for the years mentioned below. And really the main takeaway from this chart is that our 21 forecast is in line with historical values when it comes to, when we're looking at it from a volatility perspective. So we're seeing a pretty tight fit for the 21 forecast, the 20 projection, as well as 19 actuals, which gives us confidence in the seed we've used this year for the BRP. So this is the last slide for pool prices. This, I'll maybe ask at this point if anybody has any questions.
It looks, Riley, it looks like we've got a question from Evan, and says, just a trivia question. When do the IBOC and LBCO contracts end? Some of those must be around 20 years old by now. Thanks.
So I'll default to Karen for this one.
Sorry, just on muting, and apologies for not asking for questions after my wire section. So the IBOC 1 ends in 2021, and the LBCSO is 2022 and 2024.
Perfect. Thanks, Karen. And it doesn't look like we've got any questions right now. So Riley, please go ahead.
Perfect. So we'll move into the next section, which is our 2021 load outlook. On the next slide, which is slide 26, we'll start off with the load measurement definitions. And before we dive in, I just wanted to let kind of note that we've added a few slides to the 2021 load outlook. This is one of the new slides. And then the last three slides of the load outlook that include net to grid load and system load are also new this year. And we included these based on stakeholder feedback. Feedback around wanting to see all of the values of load that are used as inputs for the BRP. So that's what we've done this year. And so we'll start off taking a look at the waterfall chart on this slide. We'll start on the left side with AIL, which many of us are familiar with. And AIL is an input in the OR volumes forecast. Specifically, it's used to set the level of contingency reserve during high import hours. And as we move from AIL to net to grid load is equivalent to AIL less behind the fence load. And when we say behind the fence load, what we mean by that is self-supply load. So the other way you can think of it is sites with an industrial system designation. For net to grid load, this is one of our primary inputs in the OR volumes forecast. It's used to set the base level for contingency reserves based on our Alberta reliability standards. And then as we move from net to grid load to system load's equivalent to net to grid load less load served by distributed generation and DAP volumes. For the distributed generation, that's specific to sites greater than 5 megawatts. And so for system load, effectively, the DTS, FDS, DOS net load term in there, you can look at as a financial measure. So there's adjustments for the DAT within that measure. And then, as I mentioned, one of the key differences being the load served by distributed generation, which is included in net to grid load, but not system load. And you can think of distribution connected sites like a solar site that serves load in the area and effectively offsets DTS. And for system load, this is used as an input in the energy market trading charge. It's one of the key inputs, and it's a key input in establishing the denominator for the energy market trading charge. And of course, within system load, we also see that losses are included in that load measure. Great, so we'll move to the next slide, slide 27. So the first load outlook we'll start with is the AIL outlook. And the AIL outlook considers the RBC Bank June 2020 outlook for economic drivers, considers oil sands production forecast from the 2020 IHS market forecast, P50 weather, considers the impact of the pandemic on load, as well as calendar effects. And AIL is projected to decrease by 2.6% from 2019 to 2020, an increase, forecasted increase of 1.3% from 2020 to 2021. We'll hop to the next slide. Great. So taking a look at the table, we'll start with the 2020 comparison. So when we look at the 2020 projected AIL value versus the 2020 BRP, we see a 6% reduction when we're looking at those forecasts. And that's primarily due to the effects of the pandemic, effects of low oil prices, as well as just the general downturn we've seen and how that affects industrials. Then as we move to the 21 AIL forecast, we see an increase of 1.3%. This is attributed to an expected partial recovery from the pandemic, a recovery in the economy, as well as some forecasted growth in the oil sands. And another important term I'd note is the one I noted in, I believe it was slide 24, the load measurement definitions, the load served by distributed generation. So that's also a term that we're expecting to increase in 21, and that's consistent with what we're seeing in the project queue. So even though that has more of an effect on net to grid load than AIL, I think it's still worth noting as a growth factor for AIL. Move to the next slide. So that'll be slide 29. And so what we're seeing here is average monthly AIL for 2019 historics, the year 2020, and the 2021 forecast. And you can glean some interesting insights from this chart. We see in April and towards the middle of the year, that's where we're really seeing the effects of the pandemic and low oil prices. And then as we look toward the end of the 2020 year, we see that We've modeled a slow recovery. So we see it coming back up closer to the 2019 values, barring December in 2019, which was a cold month. And then moving to the 21 forecast, we see it starts off similar to 2020. But then during that April and middle of the year period, we do see the partial recovery from the pandemic, as well as the low oil prices. And then towards the end of the year, that slow recovery is continuing, and we're coming up to those 2019 values, either close to or at 2019 values. So this is the last slide for AIL. Maybe this is a good point to stop. If there's any questions.
We've got a question from Victoria. This is also a trivia question. What AIL volume level are we effectively going back to here, earlier than 2018?
Perfect. So I'll actually address that. I think it's the second last slide for the load outlook. We have all of the years posted up. So we'll get to Victoria's question at that time. So we'll...
I think with that question, Riley, if you look at your table, I don't know if it goes as low as the projected 2018, like it's not quite as low in 2018. It's lower, the projected and the forecast, so.
Oh, yes, of course. Yeah, thanks, Karen, for clarifying that. And sorry, just to clarify, would you mind repeating the question?
So Karen, I've moved that in, but it's what AIL volume level are we effectively going back to here, earlier than 2018?
Perfect. So when we're looking here, we're seeing really that partial recovery in 21, right? So we're not even coming back to the 2019 or 2018 levels. We're kind of sitting in between the 2020 projection and the 2019 actuals.
So would it be like 2017 or 2016 or?
So just to clarify, on slide 31, it says 2017 actual would be 82,000. So that gets you back to the computer. So.
Thanks, Todd.
Yeah, so we can take a look at that kind of when we get to that slide as well. Perfect. So we'll go to the next slide, slide 30. So next we'll take a look at our net to grid load and system load outlooks. And these consider the RBC Bank June 2020 outlook for economic drivers, P50 weather, the impact of pandemic on load. And then one thing to note, we've added a time series trend variable to both outlooks. And really what this variable captures is the growth in distributed generation. Then we've also considered calendar effects. So for net to grid load, we see a projected decrease of 2.6% from 2019 to 2020, and a forecasted increase of 1.6% from 2020 to 2021. And for system load, we see a forecasted decrease of 2.8% from 2019 to 2020, and a forecasted increase of 0.8% from 20 to 21. In the next slide, so slide 31, this is the table I was talking about before, where we've kind of captured the 21 forecast, the 20 projected, as well as the three previous years. So hopefully that answers your question, Victoria. Kind of gives you an idea of where we're sitting in 21 relative to historic years. And what we're seeing here is we really see the effect of the downturn on the 2020 projected values, anywhere from 2.6% to 3%. We really see the effects of the pandemic on DTS, FTS, DOS, and system load. And then what we're seeing is a partial recovery, as I mentioned, in all of the load measures, with none of them coming back to 2019 levels. So they're still sitting under that. And One thing that you might be wondering is why net to grid load is growing at effectively double the rate of system load. And that's due to kind of what I mentioned before, where we're expecting growth in load served by distributed generation. So that has a strong impact on net to grid load. And then it also has an offsetting effect on DTS. That kind of explains those differences. Hop to the next slide. So on this slide, we've shown the average monthly load across 2019 in 2020 for both historics and the forecast, and 2021. And our forecast starts in August of 2020. And really the main takeaway here is we're seeing a reasonably similar shape across our load measures. And this gives us confidence in the forecast that we've put together this year. So this is the last slide for the load outlook. So I think this would be a good time to stop and see if there's any questions.
Okay. Doesn't look like we have any questions.
Okay. Well, maybe we'll move on to the cost of ancillary services. On the first slide that we have on slide 34 is with regard to the forecast methodology for operating reserves. So for operating reserves, we forecast both active OR costs as well as standby OR costs, including activations. And our methodology is as follows. We take the forecasted volumes in each hour, multiply it by the forecasted OR prices. In the case of active OR, that's indexed to pool price. And then we sum those up and sum them to an annual level, and that's what you're seeing in the slide set. So for volumes, these are set. For contingency reserve, these are set based on our Alberta Reliability Standard requirements, taking into account net to grid generation, net to grid load, and we also make some assumptions for import levels. And then for regulating reserves, these are based on standard formulas that we're really able to carry forward in the 21 year. For OR prices, this is based on the relationship between OR prices and pool prices over the previous 4 years. And we effectively take the average, and then we bring that forward for the 20 projection and 21 forecast. So move to the next slide, which is slide 35. And we have the forecast ancillary service costs. So we'll start with operating reserves. And we'll start with the 2020 comparison. So the 2020 projected OR costs are 27% lower than the 2020 BRP OR costs. And this is partly due to the significant drop in pool price across those forecasts. So we saw that 15% drop. We've also seen some reductions in active regulating reserve procurement earlier in the year, which have impacted the regulating reserve volumes. And then in addition to that, we've seen an update to the LSSI lookup table, which effectively during high import hours, what that means is we're arming more LSSI and we need less operating reserves. So that also has an effect on the contingency reserve volume. Then as we move to the year 21 for operating reserves, we see it's fairly similar to the 2020 projection, despite an increase in pool price. And this is due to kind of within this year, we fully realize the effects of some of the changes in 2020 across the whole year. So the reduction in volumes and increase in pool price kind of cancel each other out. For load shed service for imports, LSSI, we see a significant increase in the 20 projected versus 2020 BRP. And this is due to, as I mentioned before, for the OR, there was a change to the LSSI lookup table in June of 2020, which resulted in the need for more armed LSSI during high import hours. We've had a high import year, so that's a main contributor. And then in addition to that, we did issue trip payments during the month of June. And for the 21 forecast, really what we're seeing here, again, is that full realization of the changes in 2020 to the LSSI lookup table and the need for more armed volumes. When we look at contracted TMR, we see there's no costs in the 21 forecast. That agreement expired September 30th of 2020. And then for conscripted services, we are assuming similar operating conditions to 2020. So therefore similar costs. Reliability service, this is a contract that we have with PowerX that dates back to 2015. So those cost levels are consistent across the years. For black starts, we see a relatively consistent cost level from 20 to 21. But it isn't, I would note that currently new agreements with the same facilities are being procured, and those will be effective at the start of 2021. For TCR, we expect similar operating conditions in 21 to 2020, so therefore similar costs. And Poplar Hill, no costs associated. That contract was canceled in mid-2019. So when we look at the total ancillary service costs, we see a level in 21 that's similar to our 2020 projection, with really a slight reduction. So this might be a good place to stop as well for questions. This is the last slide for the forecasted ancillary services.
Here we go. We've got a question from Heather Ross. Heather, if you want to unmute yourself.
Can you hear me now?
Yes.
Okay, great. I'm just wondering if you could elaborate more on the load shedding services and what impacts are happening there. You mentioned something about payments in June, and I don't know that if that was LSSI or if that was something else.
Yeah. So I can elaborate on that. So for with respect to the trip payments in June, so those were issued as a result of the June, I believe it's June 7th, 2020 event. And within LSSI, there's about three areas where costs can come from. One's availability, the availability payments, and those are assumed to be kind of consistent as we move to 21. Armed volumes, which I've talked about, and then there's the tripping component, and really those costs are only associated when we need to trip the load ships and ports. And so in that case, it did contribute to the 2020 projected costs. Does that answer your question, Heather?
Okay, yeah, so that's why in the BRP it was at 20.6 and we ended up at a higher, we're looking at more like 31.7.
Yeah, and just to clarify, I would say that the main driver of that is the fact that we've had a lot of imports this year, and during high import hours, we end up arming more load shed service for imports. And then with the changes to the lookup table in June, that actually resulted in a need for even more armed volumes during those high import times.
Meaning the weather is basically driving this. And the loss of units at that time.
Yeah, so with respect to the armed volumes, it more comes down to the operations of our BC Mattel interconnection and how we're covering that contingency. And that's really where the armed volumes play in, which are the primary driver for that uptick in costs.
Okay. Would reinforcements, now I'm going out on a limb here, I'm not an expert in this by any means, but would reinforcing Mattel have driven those LSSI costs down if it were reinforced?
So I'm gonna ask Kevin for his thoughts on
this. Or I don't know if that's the right word, like expanded, running at full capacity.
Sure. Hi, Heather. It really depends what you mean by reinforcement of MADL. So just an expansion of MADL would not in itself lower that cost. So the requirement for LSSI really comes down to the size of the contingency that we face as a system based on the volume of imports. So what could impact that is anything that allows us to break the current connection between MADL and the BC intertie. So there is the concept of a converter station on MADL, a back-to-back AC to DC to AC converter station. So something like that long-term could impact the volume of LSSI that we require to guard against the frequency.
Okay.
An expansion of the capability of MADL without anything further would really not have an impact on that LSSI volume. Certainly not in a negative direction. It may actually increase it, but I'd have to talk to our technical folks to really understand what that would look like.
Okay, thanks.
Perfect. Thanks, Heather.
Great. Was there any other questions, Carla, or are we good to move on?
I think we're good to move on. We don't have any in the Q&A and no one's raised a virtual hand. So yeah, Riley, please go ahead.
Perfect. So next we'll dive into the forecast transmission line losses.
Riley, I do have Richard put up his hand just as I said for you to go ahead. Richard, if you want to unmute yourself and ask your question.
Oh, hi, can you hear me?
Yes.
One thing, and you folks always deal with AIL, and I always look at DTS. And DTS keeps falling, right? That's the actual load ma and pa's consuming and the actual load moving on the wires. And it keeps falling, right? Like it's lower for the last 10 months than it was in 2019, and it's lower again since 2018, and I can go back and back and back, and it's the DTS, which is the actual electricity consumed, not behind the fence, is falling, and yet you folks keep saying load's going up. How do you square that?
Yeah, so for this year we did include DTS, FTS, DOS, as well as system load. And you might have seen in the table, I forget which slide it was on, but we do recognize kind of the trends that are happening in the DTS space. And as you've seen, kind of as a result of the pandemic, there was quite a drop that we saw in 2020. And then really what we're capturing in 21 with that 0.8% is just really a partial recovery in some of those areas that have been more affected by the pandemic. And I mean, I think for the system load forecast this year, I don't think it's particularly bullish as we look to 2021. But what I will say, Richard, is we do recognize some of the trends happening in that space and have been putting efforts there as well to continue improving our forecast models. One of the things we identified for the BRP was that time series trend variable, which we felt really improved the model. But we do continue to look to improve those models. But, Kevin, did you have any thoughts on that, Kevin?
I think you covered it. Riley, Richard, I would say that's one of the reasons why we're trying to increase our emphasis on looking at the different components of load to try to get a much better handle on those different trends.
But the DTS load fell from 2018 to 2019, way before the pandemic, right? Like it was down a terawatt hour before the pandemic hit, and it's down another terawatt hour since, right?
Right. So
you're seeing things that are happening in society, right? And I don't know if you're modeling them correctly, because you keep saying AIL is going up. So if AIL is going up, how's it going up when the actual load is falling? The actual load on the wires is falling.
Well, I think when you look at the historical numbers, we did see a decrease in load in 2019 across all the different categories. We've seen an even larger decrease this year, and a lot of that decrease is due to, you know, the pretty dramatic impacts of the pandemic combined with a low oil price impacting our industrial sector. So when we look at the 2021 forecast, we've got a growth in load relative to where we are in 2020, because we are expecting a recovery in the economy, both due to recovery from COVID and stabilization of the oil price and the oil industry. But again, when we go back to the numbers, we're still forecasting numbers at all those load levels that are below the 2018 load levels. So I think we are recognizing and capturing those trends in our forecast.
Okay. If there's no further questions, maybe we'll move into the line losses section. So for line losses, our methodology is as follows. We take the forecasted volumes in each hour and multiply it by the forecasted pool price. The volumes are based on a statistical model that captures the relationship between load drivers and losses. It considers economic drivers, P50 weather, and calendar effects. And the pool price that we use is provided, as we mentioned before, by the EDC. We'll go to the next slide, which is slide 38. And taking a look at the table, we'll start off with the losses volumes. So we see a 2% increase in losses volumes in 2020 relative to the 2020 BRP. And this is attributed to less Northwest gas-fired generation. And within the Northwest, if we think of the Grand Prairie and Valley View area, those are areas with negative loss factors for the gas units. And when we see less dispatch, less generation in that area, it has a net positive effect on transmission line losses. So that's what we're seeing in 2020. And then we see in 2021, a level that's in line with what we've seen historically, and a bit of a decrease from the 2020 projection. Then when we look at costs, we see really costs are kind of moving in proportion to the movements that we see in price. So see about a 15% drop in price from the 20 projected to the 20 BRP. We see that similar drop in the transmission line loss costs. And then similarly, as prices move up by 9% in 21, we see about a 9% move in transmission line loss costs. So this is my last slide. If there's any questions, we're happy to answer them. And if there isn't any, I'll pass it back to Karen.
All right, Riley, it looks like there's another question from Richard. And I just wanted to let everyone know, Heather was from AltaLink and Richard's from IPCA. If we can just remind people who are asking questions to state their organization, please. Richard, you'll just have to unmute yourself. Please go ahead.
Oh, hi, it's Richard Penn again from IPCA. Are the volumes of line losses going down over the years? I think that was promised with the HVDC lines. Are we actually seeing line loss volumes going down?
Yeah, so it's really depends on, I guess, which years you're looking at. When we look at the reduction from 2017 to 2018, we saw about a 16% reduction over those years, year over year. So that was a significant reduction. And then as we're looking forward here, we've kind of seen this level fairly consistently, that 1870 to 1880 level, with the exception of the 20 projection. So it's almost like we saw a big drop in 18, and then we've kind of seen it level off in as we approach 2021. As for the transmission lines and their direct effects, I'll probably defer to Kevin for that question.
Well, I think you captured it in your statement there, Riley, that probably the biggest impact there would be just off the table there from 2017 to 2018 in terms of seeing those effects start to show up.
Riley, what were the volumes of losses in 2017?
Yeah, so I don't have that exact number off the top of my head. It was in the range of, I think it was in the range of 2100 or 2200, but you can easily check that. We can also grab those values just in the previous BRP.
Thank you.
Perfect. Thank you, Richard.
Awesome.
All right. Riley, it doesn't look like, have to give just a second or two. Got any further questions? Perfect. So I think we're good. And now Nicole.
Okay, great. Thank you. Good morning, everybody. I'll be walking you through the preliminary general administrative budget. Hazel, if you can move to the next slide. Thank you. So what we have here is the high level overview of our own costs. The 2021 budget, you'll see for general administrative, is at 94.2 million. This is in comparison to the 2020 projection of 90.7 and the 2020 BRP of 96.2. So you'll see a reduction there. We will be going through this in more detail in the subsequent slides. As far as interest, we see it at 2.8 million for 2021. We do see this as a large reduction from both the 2020 projected and the 2020 BRP. This is due to continuous declining deferral balances and primarily to a low interest rate right now due to the current economic environment. The amortization is at 26.2 million. You'll see the 2020 projected at 31.5. The large increase there over the 2020 BRP was due to a change in estimated useful life of some very significant systems that expedited some of their depreciation in that year. So amortization, again, is very subject to forecasting the timing of when assets will be placed in service. So it is subject to a lot of fluctuation there. Could you move to slide 41, please? We'll talk a little bit about the budget process as it is consistent with prior years. We base our own cost budget on the business plan for the budget year. So the initiatives for the ASOS business were discussed at the August 11th and September 21st BRP meetings. We assess our required resources, both internally and externally, on various criteria. Our largest costs, as you can see for our G&A own costs, is our staff costs and our consulting. So assessment of those resources is necessary. We look at what may be required to deliver on those key business initiatives, as noted. We have to consider any specialized knowledge, skill, or cost-effective resources. And that's to bringing in-house, utilizing those skills where available, and reducing costs. We may have resource constraints due to workflow or the timing of initiatives that need to occur. And then we always look to ensure that we're taking risk mitigation requirements into consideration. We do this assessment and look at our resources on a holistic basis across the organization. Slide 42. Other budget considerations, of course, ensuring reliability of the AIES is critical and always at our foremost. We focus on the delivery of the key initiatives as discussed with the stakeholders. So just to refresh on what those were, our external initiatives that were brought forward at those meetings included the red tape reduction, the general tariff application, tariff modernization, optimizing the grid, distribution coordination, technology integration, settlement audit, the OR market competitiveness enhancement, and the market sustainability and evolution 1 and 2. Now, in addition to these external initiatives that we plan for, we always have continued work and effort provided to a variety of internal initiatives in addition. So there are always internal initiatives going place that also utilize our resources. So this process is driven by the successful delivery of the key corporate initiatives while maintaining our high standards of reliability. We'll note that no new staff resources have been added in 2021 to deliver on these base business or external initiatives. Slide 43, please. Some other information, just high level regarding the budget. You'll see that that proposed general administrative cost for 2021 is $2 million, about 2% lower than the budgeted 2020 costs. So this is due to just significant efforts to minimize and or defer costs given the economic conditions and understanding of that. The forecasted G&A costs for 2020, you saw, were quite a bit lower than the budgeted expectations, and that's due to that unexpected impact of COVID-19 on the timing and completion of work, as well as reduced administrative costs to move to a remote work environment, in addition to those strategic efforts to minimize and or defer the spend. The budgeted staff costs are one of those largest costs. They include a proposed staff compensation adjustment. To clarify, this is just the inversions, compressions, and promotions component. It's consistent with the prior year, and it is just a placeholder. So any additional assessment is required and determine the amount for 2020, and this will be subject to separate ASO board approval as in prior years. We'll note as we get to the later slides that the trading charge for 2021 is lower than 2020. This reflects not only the reduction in costs and efforts to, but the effort to reduce some of the impact from COVID-19 in the economic environment. So we've deferred some portions of that, and we'll discuss that in detail. Slide 44. Perhaps I pause before we start going into the in detail. Are there any questions on the budget process?
Looks like we've got one from Evan. Evan, if you want to unmute yourself, please go ahead and state your organization as well.
Great. Thanks. Thanks, Carla. It's Evan Berry from IPSA, the Independent Power Producers Society of Alberta. Just if you could back up two slides to the list of priorities for 2021. I'd appreciate that. So we've had a chance, as you appreciate, to comment on some of these initiatives before. The last two on the ones, OR and market sustainability, the market sustainability had a bunch in there like ramp tables and mothball rule and everything else. You know, we're not so sure that those are needed at this time. And we've made that point before. And with OR, reserve market competitiveness, you know, we sure wouldn't mind understanding what that project is about, what the ISO intends to achieve with it. And, you know, we would suggest that the ISO reach out to stakeholders and review these priorities before they get introduced into a 2021 budget. I would like to have seen a terms of reference for this and even, you know, discussion whether something that is needed now. And so I've got a few follow-ups, but if you don't mind just commenting on, as stakeholders, we can't effectively support these initiatives if we don't know what they're about. And when do we get to make that kind of get that kind of clarity in this process?
Certainly, as I wasn't involved in the stakeholder sessions, Todd, perhaps I will defer this to you just to talk a little bit about the process there, and or Karen, perhaps, on the timing and discussions of the key initiatives.
Sure. So I think, Evan, as Miranda had discussed as part of the previous two meetings, that they need to do some initial work on these initiatives and determine whether they're going to go ahead with them or not. And I, as part of that process, Evan and I discussed these with stakeholders, so I think that's yet to be determined. if I could use that, and I think that was discussed at the last stakeholder meeting. I do get your comments, but I think that's the process, is to do some initial work on the front end of these and have those discussions and then initiate the initiatives once we determine whether they need to go ahead or not.
Right. Okay, Todd. So that's your last statement is helpful. So this is, let's call it high level scoping of things that the ISO may undertake.
But yeah.
A further discussion, right? Potential go, no-go decision, correct?
That is my understanding, was discussed. Moran discussed that the last stakeholder meeting. Correct me if I'm wrong, Karen or Kevin?
That's how I understand it as well, and that would be part of those processes. And this is introducing what would be potentially, you know, undertaken next year, but then it would be through those processes that the assessment on how far to go forward with those initiatives would be done during those processes, not in this process.
Yeah, but we can definitely.
I think that's a good suggestion in terms of reference. I don't know if they generally do that with their processes in the markets area.
So. The other thing, Evan, I would just, I'm sure you're aware of, but just remind you about the, there is a market initiatives roadmap that we put out that breaks down the initiatives in a bit more detail and talks about the different stages of those, which would include sort of initial analysis and assessment on our part, and then driving to the stakeholder engagement. So, you know, certainly we're going to follow the stakeholder engagement protocol that we have in place, and that's going to include, you know, discussions with stakeholders about the need for various market changes and the supporting analysis that drives that. So the other thing I wanted to just point out is, you know, specifically on the OR competitiveness, that was something that we had identified in our market mitigation report to the minister, which was posted. And so that's really looking at ways that we can try to enhance competitiveness in the reserves market.
Yeah, thank you for that. If I heard correctly, there will be a go, no-go decision on these initiatives yet to come. These are simply a collection of things that the ISO may do at this point.
Yeah, I think that's fair. And I think each of those initiatives is really composed of, you know, several components, each of which will have that same kind of go, no go decision.
Yeah, except a few go, like red tape reduction and GTA and tariff modernization and optimizing the grid. And those are all good ones. Those are all ones you've got kind of universal stakeholder support on. It's the last two that we've been raising, you know, our questions about timing since this BRP process began. So I'm glad to hear that there may be a still go, no-go decision yet to come. Thank you.
Yeah, and I think they'll need to do the assessment, some assessment to determine that.
And just a reminder, Evan, there is the ISO replies to stakeholder comments on session one and the proposed business initiatives, and that's posted up on the website, as well as the deck for September 21 and the August 11th. That provides a bit more detail in addition to what Kevin mentioned for the market-related initiatives roadmap. There is some additional detail in both those decks on those initiatives. But the ISO reply certainly will kind of lay out where Miranda was talking to, as Todd alluded to, for these initiatives with that decision on the assessment.
Great. Thank you, everybody, for your inputs and support on that. Again, part of the budgetary process, of course, does take a while to accumulate, so it's often being pulled together as a preliminary number at the same time that we're working through some of the initiatives and stakeholdering. So we look now at some of the more detail on the general administrative costs. This is on slide 44. So we'll see the 2021 budget, the staff costs are at $66.7 million, which is consistent with the 2020 BRP. It's pretty close to the 2020 projected. We'll talk through some of the staff differences on a subsequent slide there. Contract services and consultants, you can see, has come down about $2 million from the 2020 BRP. Again, due to cost-saving efforts, timing of projects, you'll see it's somewhat consistent with our 2020 projected as we try to bring down some of that work. The administrative, you'll see, is at 5.3, and that is in comparison to 4.8 in the 2020. The primary driver to this increase has been the insurance premiums due to some market conditions in our current year renewals that are somewhat out of our control. The 5.3 is compared to the 3.8 in the 2020 projected is again due to that unexpected impact of COVID-19, where all types of training and work, the remote work environment kicked in the middle of the year. The facilities, computer services and maintenance, and telecommunication, you can see, are pretty consistent with prior years. Computer services maintenance saw some decrease due to deferral of costs in the COVID environment in the 2020 projection. Overall, again, that $94.2 million compared to $96.2 million in the prior year budget. Slide 44, Hazel. Thank you. This is just a reconciliation of those significant differences between the 2020 approved budget and the 2021 preliminary budget. So we started at 96.2 last year. Again, that conversation on staff costs. So there is the $1 million proposed compensation adjustment we discussed at the onset. This is for the adjustments that were mentioned in the beginning slide. So that increase was offset by some increased capitalization of labor, that's about $600,000, as well as some miscellaneous staff cost decreases of about $300,000. So that net wash was about zero that you'll see on that 66.7 that agreed to the 2020 BRP. The contract services and consultants, as we mentioned, is down about $2 million. The administration is up about 0.4, and again, that's due primarily to the insurance premium increases. And the remaining categories, which include the facilities, computer services, maintenance, and telecommunications, overall have a decrease of about 0.5 from the prior year. Next slide, please. We have provided this information to talk about some of the costs that are direct costs related to those strategic initiatives. So you'll see in here that within the consulting budget, we have forecasted preliminarily about $0.3 million in consulting costs related to the tariff modernization and general tariff application. The consulting cost does include legal costs. The technology integration is again same at 0.3. And then we have the settlement audit at 0.1 and the all of the market sustainability, evolution, and or competitiveness at 0.1. The dashes may include dollars, but they're not significant to make it to the 0.1 mark for rounding. The capital costs, so any capital costs related to these strategic initiatives, may include $1.2 million under optimizing the grid and $0.4 million under technology integration. Slide 47. This is our other industry costs. These are generally the costs that are not in our control. The AUC fees that you see in the 2021 budget are currently based on historical averages. That's because we don't have the actual numbers at this point in the preliminary budgeting process, but you can see the historical averages are kind of consistent with prior years. The regulatory process costs, however, you do see coming down at $1.3 million compared to the 2020 projected at $1.6 million, so those are pretty close. This would be in comparison to what was forecast in the 2020 BRP, which included some significant costs around enterprise and certainly the loss factor calculations for historical periods. The WEC, NWPP, and NERC costs have stayed consistent, fluctuating very little over the years. Slide 48. You're welcome to stop at any time or ask questions. You're open to interrupt me. Carla, if you see anything come up there. This is the energy market trading charge. As we talked about on the first slide, we have come down from the prior year. So this is the actual posted compared to the 2021 budgeted. And this slide is the cents per megawatt hours. So for the ASO costs, you see 28.5 cents compared to the 2020 of 29.8. That reflects that reduction in costs overall, the reduced budget that you've seen in the preceding slides. the energy market deficit is the cumulative energy market deferral account shortfall that we've talked about in several years now. We have been deferring this and recovering it over a three-year period from 2020 to 2022. You'll see the 2020 amount was 6.6 cents per megawatt hour, and we have brought down the 2021 to only 1.2 by deferring some of those additional amounts to future periods, and we'll evaluate the recovery of that at a later year. And that's just to accommodate this economic downturn and try to reduce the costs. So that brings the total ASO component to 29.7 compared to the 36.4 in the prior year. If you go to slide 49, this is just a look at the dollars underlying that for the recoverable costs. Again, as Riley had mentioned, you have the system load component and then you have the recoverable cost component. So this is just showing you the variance there in the ASO costs that are allocated on a preliminary basis here to market at 34.3 on our ASO costs compared to the 40 in the prior year. And that the amount that would be recovered, presumably with the deferral energy market deficit cents per megawatt hour, would be about 1.5 million for 2021 compared to the 8.9 in 2020. That is the end of the G&A points. If you want to proceed a slide, and I'll open up now for questions.
So far, we've got no questions. We've got nothing in the Q&A and no one's raised their hand. We'll still have an opportunity for questions once we're done, but I think we can move forward.
Okay, I'll let Karen take over then for the capital budget components. Thank you.
Thank you, Nicole. Okay, we'll take a look first at the 2020 projected compared to the 2020 BRP. So for the total capital, it's a decrease down to 23.9 from 29.3, and the 2021 budget is 26.6 compared to the 23.9 and the 29.3. And then we'll go into the details of the budget further along. So we can go on to the next slide. These are the capital budget categories. These are the same as in previous years. So we've got key capital initiatives. Those are the most critical projects that the ISO believes must be completed within a specific time frame. We've added to this also the business initiatives capital, associated capital under this key capital initiatives category. So you'll be able to see the capital associated with the business initiatives that's spent throughout the year. And then we've got the other capital initiatives category. So those are projects that have more flexibility in planning or delivery. So timing is not as critical. And then we've got life cycle funding, leasehold improvements, hardware replacements, end of useful life and reoccurring software upgrades, and then major projects, which are significant multi-year projects requiring separate board approval. So we currently don't have any major projects right now. So we can go on to the next slide, Hazel. So some budget information. So just some explanations on the variances. So the budgeted proposed capital costs for 2021 are 2.7 million lower than the budgeted 2020 costs due to some efficiency gains and significant efforts to minimize or defer costs given the current economic conditions. And then the projected capital costs for 2020 are 5.4 million or 18% lower than the budgeted amount that we had for 2020. And that's due to the impacts of COVID-19 on timing of some work. And then as well as efficiency gains and efforts again to minimize or defer spend. So on to slide 54, please. So this is just the detail categories with the capital budget. So we've got the key capital initiatives. So for 2021, we've got five key capital initiatives. So business system modernization at 1 million. Cybersecurity and critical infrastructure protection, 1.1 million, optimizing the grid, which is a business initiative at 1.2 million, the technology integration business initiative at 8.4 million, and then we've got EMS sustainment at 7.3 million. So for 2021 budget, we've got key capital initiatives at 10.9 million compared to the projected last year, which was 10.3 million. And that's got some different key initiatives this year versus the coming year. And then if we compare that to the 2021 BRP amount, which was 13.4 million for the key capital initiatives. And then comparing the other capital initiatives, we've got 10.5 million for the 2021 budget and 9.7 projected for 2020 compared to the 11 million in the 2020 BRP. And then life cycle funding is 5.2 million for the 2021 budget compared to the 3.9 projected and the 2020 BRP budget of 4.9 million. So any questions around the capital budget?
Karen, we don't have anyone raising their hand just yet, or any in the Q&A. So I think we can move forward.
The other capital initiatives are, this is just a summary on slide 55 of the various different projects that are captured by that caption, which are, as she said, these are a bit more flexible. To some degree, facilities is not so flexible because that relates to our system control center, replacing some end-of-life equipment. Some system enhancements, which are small projects to improve our existing systems. And then there are various projects related to business technology solutions. So this is just a summary of those other type projects that she was mentioning. Do you want to move ahead, Hazel? And on slide 56, life cycle, we call it life cycle. This is the area of hardware that we need to replace on an annual basis just to maintain our base business. So these are, you know, communications, database applications, end user computing, enterprise services monitoring network, et cetera, are the things that we replace on an annual basis. We call that life cycle. That's how we've defined it. And I think the next slide, it's just management controls. I won't really talk about this. This talks about when we go over the budget or things happen where we need to come back for board approval or come back to stakeholders for a abbreviated process if required. So this has been around for a long time, and we had agreed to this with stakeholders of a process should something happen and we need additional funds to fund our business. And next slide, I think that's it. So I think we just want to thank, like, is there any questions, I guess, Carl? Before I jump onto this slide, I better ask, is there any questions before I hop ahead? So.
Perfect, thanks, Todd. Yeah, does anyone have any questions about what's been presented? Nothing quite yet. So Todd, yeah, if you want to do this, and then I can run the poll, and then we can find out if there's any further questions from there.
I guess we do want to thank everyone for participating in the three meetings. Make sure we had the additional meeting at the request for stakeholders. So evidently, we'd appreciate your feedback on this year's process, where that worked, if you had other suggestions. So evidently, we're going to look for that those opportunities. So I'll turn it over to you, Carla, because I know you're going to run your poll for questions. But again, I just want to acknowledge everybody for participating, and thank you again for participating in the process this year.
Perfect. Thanks, Todd. If you've been present in any of our stakeholder, Hazel, if you can just go back one slide to slide 60, thank you. Any of the sessions that we've had at the ISO, we usually do a survey at the end to collect some feedback. We're trying to limit survey fatigue, and so we're just going to do a Zoom poll here so you can quickly tell us how the session was. I'll run that immediately, and then we'll go to our next steps. So if any, there we go. Perfect. When I see it stop scrolling, I'll shut down the poll. All right, thank you. I think we've got all our stakeholders. Thank you so much. If we could move to the next slide, Hazel. Slide 61. And Karen, I don't know if you want to try or Todd.
Sure, why don't I maybe just finish off for Karen? So
sure.
I think as Carla mentioned earlier that we are looking for comments back from today's session, but also the previous two sessions. So we will be posting the stakeholder comment matrix to our website. I'm looking forward for your comments due back to us on October 16th, and then we'll respond subsequent to that. So looking forward to those comments. And again, just like to say thank you for participating. And I think that's it for today's session. Carla, is there anything else you want to add to the ending here?
No, we'll see if there's any further questions. Thank you.
Yeah, as Karen mentioned earlier in the process, one of the steps is actually providing a presentation, stakeholders providing a presentation to the ASO board on the 2021 business plan, I guess I should say. We are looking for those parties who are interested in participating or presenting to the board. So if you could let Karen know and her email address at karen.campbell@aso.ca. And if you could let her know by October 31st that you plan to present to the ASO board, we'd greatly appreciate it. Just helps us organize those sessions. I believe it's November 18th, I think, is the scheduled date for that session. So it just gives us a bit of time to plan and organize so people can participate in that presentation.
Perfect. Thanks, Todd. And just, Hazel, if you could just go back one to that slide. And just a reminder, as it was in the terms of reference for the BRP 2021, this is based on your comments that you've submitted in one of the earlier steps. So this isn't new information, but something that you've already submitted through the BRP process. So thank you. Any further questions for any of our presenters? We'll open that up now. We've had a quieter group today.
Yeah.
Certainly. So,
early Thursday morning.
There you go. October 1st, I guess. So we're all shocked that fall is here. All right. Well, thank you so much. We are going to end the session now as we don't have any questions in the Q&A or anyone putting up their hand. So thanks again. Any final words, Todd?
Well, again, like I said, just like thank everybody for participating through the process. Please provide your comments by October 16th.
Perfect. Thank you so much. All right. We do have one question. Sorry. Oh, thank you. Just a thank you. You're welcome, Evan. All right. Thank you so much. I'm going to close the meeting now. Bye.
See you, everyone.